you know there's no going back. It's like, oh, it's not feeling great. I'm just going to switch it to an S fold. It's like, that tongue has made up its mind. Like, what fraction of like a, is a decimeter bigger or smaller than a millimeter?
Don't ask me metric questions. What are you talking about? Of course I don't know.
Dude, decimeters exist and you should be more aware of them. ShoeCast. Hi, hello, hey. And welcome to the Stitch Down ShoeCast, where we talk quality footwear, how it's made, and all the things we love about it. I'm Ben from StitchDown.com, and Ticho the Blanco is back for another shoe bag episode in which we answer listeners' questions, this time mostly about cakes for some reason, shoes too, and boots, all of it. We're going to do it all. Ticho, I've missed you. I really have. Tell us about your life.
Ben, I'm doing great. Thank you for asking. I have missed you too. It's been maybe a month and a half since we've seen each other, something like that.
You didn't even come to my birthday party.
I didn't come to your birthday party. That's true. I apologize for that.
It was a tough one.
Birthday party is always a good time. And, you know, you mentioned cake. I think I brought a big sheet cake to that one year.
You brought a Wegman sheet cake that maybe 1/8 was consumed by the guests over the course of the weekend. And then I ate the rest in like probably about 4 days.
I knew you had it in you, so I was like, I'm just getting the big one. Go big or go home for, I want to say it was, what, your 50th birthday?
54th.
Yeah, so, you know, once you're getting up there like that, you got to live it up. You know what I mean? You got to just go for it.
More cake. That's what the doctor said.
You should listen to him. But I'm doing great. I'm doing great. What am I wearing, I think you asked, on my feet?
Should have.
I think you asked that.
We're rusty.
Well, man, we're recording this. It is day three of the Thunderdome.
It is.
Something like that. So I've got my Thunderdome pair on. Got some Ustmo by Iron Boots samples. I went to China back in like June, cooked up a bunch of samples at Iron Boots, which is cool. Got them in time to wear them for the dome. I've got these Merriam Rovesio Sego, I believe is the pronunciation. So far, so good. Comfortable. Easy break in.
They look wild.
Yeah. Yeah. The clicking is like crazy. He got,
they look really good. Like really good.
Yeah. He got like all sorts of crazy striations on the vamps, like a bunch of shell portions on the vamps just to make it look like super cool. Fun to wear, fun to photograph. Been a good time. I'm excited. This is going to be my first time I actually complete the Thunderdome. I've dropped out both years.
Nobody's allowed to quit this year. It was in the rules. You're not allowed to quit. Something terrible happens to you if you quit.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to find out about that. Yeah, I think I've got a pair that can go the distance this time. So that's clutch. You need to have everything, right? You need to have the fit, the look, got to be enjoying them, everything. It's tough to commit to really wearing one pair like this. I'm glad this year I've got a winner. So it's a weight off my shoulders to not be stressing about that.
This field is absolutely stacked this year, man. And not just like, oh, these are cool, special boots, right? But let me actually check here. All right. So we're 3 days into the 10-day initial registration submission period.
Uh-huh.
So there's 7 more days. And then you can also enter in November. Usually a lot of people do then. But we've got almost 750 pairs entered. I think we had 800 last year. So let's beat that. I just have the app open. I don't have like the full spreadsheet yet because we're waiting until October 10th for that. In the open dome, there's 143 different makers. In the work dome, 31. So there's definitely some overlap. So let's say there's 150 makers in this thing, which is absolutely crazy. I've counted at least 20 people who made their own boots, a whole bunch of whom I had no idea made boots at all. Like people I know, and they're like, I made a boot. It's like, holy shit, they all look good. It's pretty wild. And like, it's the whole range, right? Of who made them, leathers. Everybody's getting really good at taking pictures, which like was an understandable early kind of gripe, right? Like, what is this, a photo contest? And like, your pictures are blurry and there's like a half gallon of milk blocking like part of your boots. So can't really tell, you know, what they look like, which is important. When you're trying to judge, especially, people come to understand that, right? And realize just how kind of fun it is to take pictures of your boots.
Mm-hmm.
Like, especially when they start to look pretty good. Something quite satisfying about it. And luckily, it applies to the contest.
Yeah, I think that may be the best part of it for me is just that so many people are now taking the art form of boot photography to higher and higher levels. So, you know, soon I look forward to a time when, you know, when people see me out with my little tripod taking photos of my boots, and no longer will I be met with a look of confusion or scorn or fear or contempt or outright hostility. I will be met with praise, congratulations, interest, love. It's taken over the mainstream.
I think those people will be venerating you. I think they will say that is somebody who is totally normal, but probably also exceptional.
Mm.
All at the same time.
I look forward to that time. Someday in the future, that will be how I am received on the streets of New Jersey. Today is not that day. I was shooting these boots right before we recorded. Yeah, somebody almost hit me on a random back road up in the hills here and gave me a look like, what the hell are you doing, man? Like, why are you out here with a little tripod taking pictures of your feet, you freak?
I've recommended this to you before. I'm going to do it again. Stop getting hit by cars.
Mm. That's good advice.
Yeah.
That's good advice. I should heed that advice. It's been a while. I've had a good streak going, relatively speaking, you know, for me.
For new listeners, DJ actually got hit by a car last year sometime. Keep it up. Keep it up. What am I wearing, you ask? You asked that, right? Yeah.
I may have implied it.
We really are rusty. I'm also wearing my Thunderdome shoes, boot shoes, also some samples, some Russell moccasins that we spun up, fishing Oxfords in a tan Laramie suede with a lacte heavier knobby-ish kind of wedge sole. All right, that's what we're wearing. Oh, wait, let's do some housekeeping. Huge thanks to our sponsor this week, Nick's Boots. The Spokane maker really has it all these days. Western boots, Chelsea boots, obviously lace-ups of all varieties from ankle boots and boot shoes, we must note, to, you know, basically like knee highs. An ever-impressive selection of leathers from America's best tanneries and a YouTube channel. Two YouTube channels. My God, these guys. Plus a podcast, although we're not mad about that. Give it all a look at nixboots.com. By the time this airs, it's probably too late to enter this Thunderdome that we just kept talking about, but give the at Stitch Down Patina Thunderdome Instagram account a follow to keep tabs on this insane field. Like, I mean, by the time you hear this and the contest is rolling, or at least November, we're kind of counting on that magical number of 1,000 pairs getting oh so wonderfully aged over a 6-month period. And as insane as it sounds, like, you should do this next year because we're going to do it again. Start thinking about what you're going to wear and then try really hard not to wear them. Also, Stitch Down Premium Discord is an absolute beehive of activity these days with well over 1,000, that magic number again, highly intelligent, wonderfully afflicted shoe and boot lovers sharing their vast intelligence, designing makeups, industry gossiping, buying and selling shoes and Johns in our no-fee marketplace, just generally being the best. It's honestly kind of incomprehensible how great a place it is until you're in there, so I'll stop talking about it. But your SDP membership is also the best way to support the ShoeCast, so check out more info at stitchdown.com. Can't wait to see you in there. Should we open up his bag?
I actually would like to present a gripe to you that I have about the Stitch Down Premium Marketplace.
What do you got?
So I've been, for many years, trying to stop myself from buying secondhand shoes. And I've been pretty good.
I thought you stopped.
I got off eBay. I deleted the eBay app. I stopped going on Style Forum, and then the marketplace was like kind of a disaster, and I just avoided it. And now you've made some changes to it. It's actually pretty functional, and I find myself looking at it quite often. And so I would just like to register that gripe with you for reining me back into looking at secondhand shoes.
The old one was crude. It was huge. Shout out Wara in the Discord, Northeast Wear, I believe, on Instagram. Yeah, who put together like the new one built on the forums platform in Discord. And yeah, it's terrible. Like, the pictures are there, the information's there. It's always like, it's like you come back in the morning and it's like 17 new posts. I was like, oh man, let's go check them out. Like, you can't not check them out now. It's actually very appealing to check them out instead of kind of being a struggle. Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty good.
You got me on that, but fair play. Fair play.
I'm always like, I've been buying like old pants in there from people, which is, they never end up fitting quite right. But it's like hot deal. But now I have a pair of Ironheart, you know, like 21 ounces that it's not even like, oh, just like lose a couple pounds and like the waist will be better. It's like my thighs are just too fucking big.
Yeah. Yeah. That's tough.
But I still wear them.
That's interesting. I feel like in the entire time I've known you, which stretches back 4 or 5 years at this point, it's been the same pair of jeans the whole time.
I'm like largely out of those Naked and Famous ones. They're like too kind of skinny these days. And I think they accidentally got like washed in the washing machine on like high. And
no.
And they like kind of shrunk a little bit. I actually haven't worn them in a while, as much as I love them. The pair I have now is like a pair that I bought on eBay used. Maybe they were new way back. This Mishka Selvage Denim. It was like this Brooklyn streetwear brand that I was really into. I also have a hat with like a bloody eyeball. Like that's all it is from them. I was pretending to be cool when I lived in the city and was only 49. But they were too small. They were like entirely too small and too tight. But I kept them for some reason. I kept them. I did drop a couple pounds at some point and they fit beautifully now.
Nice.
So that's it. But yeah, I mean, I haven't bought an actual pair of like jeans in a very long time.
Yeah, I grew out of a bunch of my jeans as I just doubled down on having the old dad bod. Hey, you gotta get some big wide pants, man. That's the move.
That's the thing.
Yeah, I've been doing these sugarcane 1947s. That's my jam, dude. They're so roomy. They've got so much room. It's awesome.
It's a good way to have a pair of pants not fit is just for them to be huge. I got some of these J. Crew giant chinos. I was like in the mall with my kids. For some reason, it was like raining when we were at their grandparents' house. I was like, let's go to the mall. You'll never believe what. So we went to the Cheesecake Factory.
Oh, heck yeah.
And then I tried them on. I was like, oh, damn, these things work. But they are legitimately quite huge. Maybe too huge. I don't know. I've been wearing them.
What did you eat at the Cheesecake Factory? I'm pro Cheesecake Factory.
I mean, it's fantastic. I got like the chicken club kind of situation.
Oh.
Grilled chicken, bacon on some kind of toast, might just be like white toast, really straightforward sandwich, perfectly executed. It's so good. You know, the fries are great. You know, my kids got like the grilled cheese that they cut up into those like long rectangles and then stack.
They
put them one way and then they rotate them 90 degrees and it's like this stack of, and they never finish them because it's a whole lot. So I had some of that. The other one got a flatbread that they didn't finish. I had a bunch of that. It really is a fabulous, fabulous establishment.
Do you do what I do and try to steer your kids to order things that you know you'll enjoy eating after they don't finish it?
I mean, it's Cheesecake Factory. I would enjoy everything.
Ah, fair point.
Doesn't even come into my mind. I believe we have a bunch of cake questions, including a cheesecake one. Again, not sure why.
Okay. So we'll get back to Cheesecake Factory.
Promise.
Yeah.
All right. Let's start out with another totally normal one. Is anyone on the ShoeCast related?
Is anyone related? I mean, we do look very similar to each other. If you and I have beards and similar haircuts, we look like we could be half brothers, right?
Are we related?
I don't think we are related, but
okay.
Yeah, like I could be the brother from like your dad's second marriage 15 years later. You know, he starts again, fresh start, but he also fucks it up again, you know, like big time.
Come on, Dad.
Yeah, it's even worse this time, but still somehow shoes are the thing. What you know, like there's got to be some,
that's true,
you know, some psychology there that we could get into, but
we're gonna go with no.
Have we ever had any guest that's related to another guest?
I don't think so either. No, I want to get Skip Horween on, and we've had Nick.
Okay, yeah, that would be a good place to start. Yeah,
I think he listens, so Skip, come on. Okay, so yeah, we're going with no on that. Glad you asked. Slightly more normal question. When it comes to oak bark leather uppers, what are your opinions?
Oak bark leather uppers?
Well, I think that they phrase it that way, which I like, because a lot of times you'll see that in like an insole or a midsole. You know, they're not cheap, so you don't see them all the time. And like the, you know, production from Baker's leather in the UK is pretty small. Yeah, for uppers, you know, and you are seeing it more, you know, with the Russian calf and, you know, just kind of like a standard smooth oak bark calf, I believe, also from Baker's. I think it looks beautiful. I've handled it, but I've never actually worn it. Known to be pretty kind of gutsy stuff, right?
Yeah, like my assumption would be it's going to be a tough break in there. It's not going to be something you slip into and day one, it's a joy. But if you're willing to put the work in on that, I'm sure it's going to age beautifully and be quite lovely. I tend to want things a little bit easier to break in at that point. Sounds like kind of a jab to be breaking in something like that.
We should ask around on this and maybe revisit it because, yeah, there are more. Like our buddy Carmine Jack Ryan, who is not named Carmine or Jack, but is named Ryan.
I assumed his name was Carmine. I thought Jack was his last name.
He makes like belts with really, really heavy duty. I have one on, I believe, right now. Yes, it's serious. You know how like, especially like a bad belt, you never know like what hole it's supposed to go into. Not because like you've changed, but because the belt has changed. And they just stretch, right? Like cheap belts kind of end up stretching. And even good belts, even good heavy duty belts, like over time will give a bit of stretch, especially if you're cranking them down. This thing does not stretch. Like, you know, when you've put on 3 pounds with this belt, you're like, oh shit, belt's telling me. So for that, but I mean, this is like, I don't even know what it is, like 12 ounces or something like that. And ages absolutely beautifully. And like, that's not what you would obviously use for footwear.
Sounds great for a belt. That sounds like a good belt.
Can't recommend Baker Oak Bark Tan belts highly enough. Brian, aka Carmine Jack, is where I got mine. I just want to like see more of it out there, right? And like kind of get some feedback from people before I can accurately answer this. I don't know. It's kind of like a supercharged Wicked and Craig, I think, in a way, right? Like old school veg tanning approach. Like definitely not done exactly the same, but I think there are similarities. And some people are like, Wicked and Craig is tough break in, get ready for it. I've never had that experience with my Wicked and Craig stuff, and it ages just so, so beautifully. I'm bullish on it, but can't say for sure personally.
Yeah, I would say just give me the Wicked and Craig harness or Latigo, whatever you got. Just give me that. I was talking to Nathan Florsheim, NF bootmaker. He used some kind of word that I had never heard before for the process that they use to kind of like soften the harness leather. And I was like, that makes sense because the break in on the pair I have from him was like basically nothing. You know, they just were comfortable from the beginning. You know, if you're getting something super rugged and oak bark, veg tan, whatever, if it's going to come unsoftened in any way, it's going to be probably difficult to work with, difficult to break in. If the tannery can use some kind of skillful process to make it a little bit more usable and wearable, but you're still going to retain that extreme durability, that extreme hard wearingness, great. That sounds like the ideal solution.
This is a great point. And no matter how much we kind of think we know about what any brand is kind of using, right? Or, you know, an individual bootmaker like Nathan, I feel like there's always kind of something secret. Nathan knows all the secrets too, which is just one of the reasons he's so damn good at this. You know, the Merriam horse butt, right? Everybody's like, oh, Merriam horse butt. And then like, there's a couple different tannages. You can get this TPR, which is like kind of mysterious to people, but like you hear what a brand said at one point, and that's like Bible. And apparently it's not thermoplastic resin, which I believe we've said on the site, which that's good as far as I'm concerned, given that I don't really want plastic on my leather. Yeah, there's always something else, right? Like there's what a brand tells you and then there's people who look deeper. But then there's things that are happening behind the scenes that like nobody ever really mentions necessarily. So back to Nathan, like I have my other Thunderdome boots this year, this Merriam Salvia horse butt. And it's kind of like gray and, you know, like a lot of gray boot leathers, kind of unfortunately because I like the gray, but it still looks great later. You know, it turns to kind of like a gray brown type situation. And it's great at the beginning, great at the end. But I was talking to him about it because I wanted to make some loafers, like some horse butt loafers. He's like, you just got to ask Merriam for their Sarah finish, like Michael Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
He comes in and does what he does, just stands around awkwardly. And the leather's like, oh, and like, it, you know, it'll change anybody. It's basically they put a bunch of wax in it, right? like on the smooth side. So it's not like wax flesh or anything like that, but it's like impregnated with this wax and it makes it really kind of soft and wonderful for him to work with, for the wearer to wear. Nobody's going like that level deep, right? It's like, here's the tannery, here's the article, maybe here's the tannage. You got to give the color a name, but there's all this other stuff that a tannery can do for you that maybe a brand or a manufacturer like doesn't want you to know, or doesn't think that you care, or didn't really care themselves, or they like have kind of like a secret that they're wanting to keep so a different brand doesn't just completely knock it off. That's probably happening. Like both Wicked and Craig pairs I have are Underhood made by Rizky. And he just tells you kind of what he's got and you know he's going to do a great job with it. And then you put it on. Again, he's like really good. And it's not terribly thick in both instances. Like, so that's going to give you less trouble, especially on break-in. But yeah, maybe he's just ordering, whether he knows or not, the softening stuff. It's good to know about things, but it's also kind of nice to have a little bit of mystery. And it's also nice when that works out in your favor.
As I've gotten a little deeper in and talked to people at tanneries, talk about ordering stuff. Yeah, there's like all these different things you can have them do to it, right? They're like, we can custom do all of these different things. You could have it however you want it. I think if you called them and said, hey, I saw, you know, this other maker use this thing, I want it the same way, I don't think they would necessarily tell you what the answer is, right? I think people want to keep a lid on, you know, we'll tell you the name of the tannery, we'll tell you the name of even the article, but we're not going to tell you the exact specs, the exact details. Even the weight of it is something that you can specify, right? Even, yeah, whether it's got wax, whether it's got oil, all these different things affect it. And I don't think anybody really wants that information out there.
I think obviously we're here to promote knowledge and understanding and all that, try and gain it ourselves every day. But yeah, I think the lesson is, as much as we think we know, there's always something else. That's the kind of magic that I'm like into. Like, I'm not like, oh, you have to tell us everything. It's like, nah, they don't. And if it's like good for whatever reason or the opposite, the word's going to get out. You know, you just pay attention to it. But like, I don't know, there's this like quest for total knowledge and complete perfection that like gets inside your head a bit, right? You're like, no, these last ones are great. How do I get this absolutely perfect pair? And I think you get closer and closer and closer. But the more you get caught up in that, the easier it is to be disappointed, which is counter to what's so fun about this whole thing, I think.
I like going on the deep dive, man. I like getting in there, learning way too much about a thing.
Me too.
But there is a saturation point where I think you get diminishing returns on your enjoyment from that information, where you're like, yeah, I do just know too much. And now I go to J. Crew or whatever, and I handle the leather on some pair of shoes there, and I'm like, it's not enjoyable anymore to just look at stuff through that lens all the time. It's like the difference between your hobby and your job, right? It's that's where the line gets tough, probably for you and me.
Let's all keep learning, especially the two of us, because people ask us questions on the internet and then we have to answer them. I don't want to drive myself completely insane with it, because that is what will happen eventually. All right, next question. Next listener shoe bag question. You knew there was an Alden question coming. Didn't expect this one. Does Alden have much of a following in the community for anything other than the Mock Toe, which I presume is the much discussed Alden indie boot? I'm going to go ahead and say yeah.
Of course they do. There's the guys out there that are just the rare shell guys, right? You got all the rare shell hunters, I guess, if you would call them that. The Cabaldon type of people who are just super into that. Not all that stuff is, obviously some of it is indies Mock Toe stuff, but most of it isn't. I think there's a whole contingent of people that just like Alden dress shoes as like the kind of last big American dress shoe maker. I think they've got some following for that.
Loafers.
And then there's just all the loafers. I mean, they have so many different things that are not just worth wearing, but like some of the best on the market offerings. Been a big fan for many years. I will continue to be. As things have gotten more casual overall, right? And as the community, especially the Stitchdown community, is very, very boot focused versus dress shoe focused, the indie really stands out as this is kind of the number one thing you would want from Alden for that community of people.
Okay, this one's kind of a follow-up to the previous question. Is the break-in process ever too much for you? Ever had a pair that just wouldn't submit?
Yeah. I find that usually the times I have to give up, it's because I size too small. There's nowhere to go. There's no way to fix it. You know, I'm not going to send something to get stretched or whatever. I don't think that really works. It's usually a sizing issue. You know, if I leave myself enough room, I can always figure it out. Instep's too high, stick a kiltie in there, stick a heel pad in there, whatever. Wear some thicker socks. You always have more options if they're bigger.
I don't know. I mean, I guess that's less of kind of like, at least for me, a break-in answer. Like, it's not like the break-in got me. It's that they couldn't be because it was the wrong size. I mean, I can think quite viscerally about some tough break-ins I've had over the years, but they were ultimately all the correct size. It was just early Red Wing Iron Rangers. Then the second pair was a breeze. I don't know. It was leather. It was like exactly how that tongue was cut. It's like rubbing on your ankles. Could have been anything, but the first one was really tough, but I was ready for it and powered through and it was worth it. Second one was a snap. I was talking with somebody yesterday. They're like, oh man, these whites, these dome whites are getting me on that like ankle. Same thing, right? With that like full gusset situation. And that one's always annoying and also mysterious because once you get past it, you're like, well, why doesn't this hurt at all? Like the leather's still there. Like what fraction of like is a decimeter bigger or smaller than a millimeter?
Don't ask me metric questions. What are you talking about? Of course I don't know.
Dude, decimeters exist and you should be more aware of them. It's like, how much is it compressing or moving? Like, it's basically not. And then one day it feels great. So it's like, yeah, those first like 3-4 days with a pair of like full gusset whites or nicks can be like annoying, but you know you're going to beat it even though you're like, this tongue's never going to move, so it's going to hurt forever. And then it just doesn't. But yeah, I don't think I've ever quit on anything that was theoretically the right size because it like got me. That's a tough boot, man. That's like a really tough boot.
Yeah, there's certainly the ones where you're like, I just need to train this tongue. I had that on my whites. Yeah, you just know going into it, this tongue is a lot. There's a lot of tongue. So you got to just fold it over really carefully and make sure it's going to sit the right way and like work all that out.
But you know, there's no going back. You can't, I'm going to fold them like, you know, both down the side so it's flat on the front. It's like, oh, it's not feeling great. I'm just going to switch it to an S fold. It's like that tongue has made up its mind.
You get one shot. You got to train it right the first time or you're cooked.
One shot.
And I went S fold on it. Ended up working out great. That's like a Merriam horse butt tongue too, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, all right, this is kind of no joke. It's a pretty thick tongue. Yeah, in my younger days, I had some tough break-ins. Yeah, my first pair of Red Wings, which I still wear to mow my lawn, they were like giving me knee pain. And I was like 25. You know,
young man over there.
Ugh. And I was like, yeah, these things are bad. Eventually, I stuck with it because I was like, well, they are the right size, right? Like everything else about it is appropriate. My foot is sitting in here well. It's all moving properly. It's just for some reason making my knees kind of sore. But at the same time, I was really into Meerman for like a couple of years. And the dress shoes would just, they were the right size, but they would just tear up my heel. But eventually they would break in and they'd be very comfortable. So I'd give up.
Never.
I go sometimes and get like a pedicure. Everybody should get pedicures, by the way. I think I've said this before. It's great, especially if you're wearing all these different boots and stuff all the time. Your feet are getting all sorts of weird calluses and stuff. I go there. They get out this like cheese. It looks like a cheese grater. They get out a thing that looks like a cheese grater. And she goes to town. And I swear I'm like a quarter size smaller when I walk out of there.
I'm familiar with that device. Isn't that bad, though? Like, don't you want the calluses? Aren't they there to protect you?
I guess so, but those are the spots where you're, I think if they build up too much, they kind of create other problems, right? If you have a big callus on one side of your heel, it's going to push your heel into the side of the heel cup the other way. I think you need it all in alignment. I go every couple months, get that thing cheese grated.
We'll be posting a video of that on our YouTube channel.
I'm due for one.
All right, let's do two more and take a break. Also kind of a follow-up. I'm not going to view this as much of a breaking question as maybe even a stylistic one. What do you do when you find yourself getting boot fatigue?
I'm not familiar with the concept of boot fatigue. You're just tired of wearing boots?
I say wear shoes.
I would wear some shoes. I'd wear some Hansones. I'd wear some loafers. I'd mix it up. You got to mix it up. That's one tough thing with the Thunderdome. You got to choose something you're not going to get tired of wearing, get fatigued of wearing. I rarely have this problem, but I also have like dozens of pairs of boots I can choose from. So don't wear sneakers, though. That's terrible. Don't take it that drastically.
I forget if I've admitted this on this podcast, but it was just so fucking hot this summer. Like, it was too hot. It was too hot to wear pants a lot of the time. And so I got some shorts. I haven't bought a pair of shorts in an extremely long time. Got myself some Patagonia shorts. And I'm like, yeah, these things are great. They don't work with any of these boots. Like, they're like kind of short.
But what inseam are you going for?
I think I got the short ones, like five or whatever.
You went five.
I didn't get the long ones.
Oh, good for you, bro.
But I sized up on them. So they're like kind of in between.
Nice.
And I loved them and they were great. I was like, oh, shorts. This is why people wear shorts. They're kind of nice, especially in an extremely hot summer. And so eventually I broke down and I got a pair of Made in USA New Balances, which I was very happy with, like straight gray, you know, the kind of shoes befitting of a 67-year-old man like myself.
Right on.
And I did wear them a bunch over the summer. Periodically, I'd like try some shoes, like some Russell Oxfords or whatever. I mean, you could definitely wear them with some Rancords, but outside of that, it was kind of tough. It was probably the first pair of sneakers I bought other than basketball shoes in a decade. So I felt okay about it.
Similar climate where I live. Yeah, also had to go buy some shorts. I went six inch. A little more modest, a little more conservative, I guess, than you. But I couldn't give up wearing belted stuff, stitch on stuff. So I just wore derbies. I just wore derbies all summer, man. Boat shoes and end of list, really, was my summer.
Wait, derbies and Patagonia baggies?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's kind of tight.
Yeah. Yeah, like it's just a suede. It's like a XBXS sample pair I've had since like last year. No socks at all. Just let it fly, man. And it was great. It was a great summer. Oh, and Grant Stone loafers. If I was like, I'm still wearing shorts, but I need to look a little going somewhere, you know?
I did do my blue suede Grant Stone loafers with like the gray shorts, and I felt pretty good about it.
Yeah, nice.
But yeah, boots.
Wasn't a good boot summer at all, man.
Boot fatigue.
It's not boot fatigue, though. It's just bad boot weather. Too hot and humid to be wearing jeans. Like, I went to China and I just packed jeans because I was like, I don't know what the shorts culture is here, you know, like I'll just wear jeans. I kept having to like hang them up in the bathroom because I had just sweated through the butt. I went to the Iron Boots workshop. I've never experienced humidity like this, man. It was like maybe 90 degrees, 100% humidity. It would just intermittently start pouring rain. You're just in a workshop, obviously no air conditioning or anything. I was just drenched. I sweated through two shirts in like a couple hours. And then they're like, we're going out to dinner. I'm like, I already sweated through the shirt I was going to wear at the dinner. So, oh well.
It's probably good for the leather. You're like kind of auto wet lasting it, you know?
I put some good wear on my boots over there for sure. Yeah, I could see.
No, but like when they're making them.
Yeah, oh yeah, I see like what you're
a humid
saying.
Environment is going to be better than a cold one where the leather's, you know, going to feel more brittle or something.
I think that's probably true.
All right, first, I think, cake question of the episode. I love how this is phrased. Money, no object. What's the best kind of cheesecake? I love how this implies that there are like cheesecakes that cost hundreds of thousands of dollars.
I would love to know what cheesecake we are unable to afford. I feel like Cheesecake Factory, it's like $10.95 or something for those big slices.
Their prices are exceptional.
Shout out to Cheesecake Factory. We love you guys. I love all kinds of cheesecake. So probably my mom makes a really good cocoa cheesecake. She has won baking contests.
No shit.
I think multiple times with the same cocoa cheesecake, and it is very good. So I will give it to my mom and her cocoa cheesecake, which I love. It's great.
Stick with the winner, mom.
And I don't know. She's never asked for any money for it. So I don't even need to. I think if I called her right now, she would make one and bring it to my house this weekend.
Everybody DM at Stitchdown on Instagram with expensive cheesecake, I guess. I'm wondering how high this market goes. Not that I care, because I don't really like cheesecake. It's too rich.
You don't like cheesecake?
Not really. I mean, it's fine. It can be fine. It can actually be completely unpalatable for me. But yeah, it's not. It's never something that I've cared about.
Have you ever tried a Japanese cheesecake?
No.
Okay. On West Broadway, there is a Japanese cheesecake place. I forget the name of it. But it's like just south of Houston Street. These things are not. You're thinking of these heavy, dense. No,
American cheesecake. Yeah.
No, this thing is fluffy. It is light. It's got different stuff in it. It's great. That might be for you. The Japanese cheesecake.
I'm open to having Cheesecake doors open for me. I'll give it a look. I'll be in the city all weekend. Probably not eating cheesecake, but I'll get there. I'll get there. All right, let's take a quick break. Be right back on the Shoe Bag. Say hello to Brandel. Surely you already know that Spokane's Nyx boots make some of the best, most indestructible work and lifestyle boots anywhere in the world. But the new Brandel line from the minds behind Nyx takes things in a totally different direction. Brandel's 1925 model is a custom dress boot with the sole of a Nyx, but thought through, finished, and executed at a hugely different level than we've ever seen before. Everything on the 1925 boot was designed from the ground up. The wonderfully sleek but not pointy last, the pattern, all of it. The components are fresh as well. Basically all the guts are made by J. Redenbach, including JR counters, insoles, midsoles, and leather outsoles, extra secured by dozens upon dozens of tiny brass nails, which, let's admit, just look really cool too. As does the signature Brandel solid brass plate, making a surprise appearance in the heel stack. And of course, we're talking top-end upper leathers from Wicked & Craig, Galoon, and even Horween Shell Cordovan. And beyond the boots themselves, when you order a pair of Brandels, you'll get your very own dedicated customer service rep who will do a consultation to ensure all your specs and sizing are straight, then take the whole ride with you, providing updates as the boots are being built right up to their completion. Pretty cool. All of it pretty cool. Learn plenty more and see what's available to order at housebrandle.com. And now, back to the Shoe Bag. All right, we're back on the Shoe Bag with Ticho Blanco. Next cake question. This is actually a tough one. Fudgy the Whale, which it's possible a lot of listeners aren't actually familiar with that because I believe Carvel is still consolidated to kind of like the Northeast, I think. But I grew up on it.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with it. Yeah.
Or Oreo ice cream cake, which let's say it's the one that you kind of get in the supermarket.
Fudgy the Whale is pretty good. I mean, I got no complaint. If you show up to my birthday party and you say, hey, happy birthday, we got you a Fudgy the Whale cake, I would be excited. I think that'd be great. It's got those crunchies all over there.
It's all about the crunchies.
Is there a term for those besides crunchies?
No, they're crunchies.
They're just crunchies, right?
That's what I've called them since I was a kid. That's what everybody calls them.
I love it. One year at work, they actually did get me a Fudgy the Whale. They served me the tail as like, here's your primo piece. Guess what doesn't have crunchies in the middle of it?
What?
The freaking tail doesn't have crunchies in the middle of it.
Oh, they're making like a kind of oval cake and then adding the tail.
So I scraped crunchies off of another part of it and
good.
Just ate that. And the outside had crunchies on it, obviously. So I do like Oreo, you know, like cookies and cream ice cream. Support that. Wouldn't be my first choice for an ice cream cake.
There's something about the density of those crunchies. I mean, it's like a frozen product, so everything's kind of preserved, but they just stay really crunchy. And like, if you eat an Oreo, it's like pretty crunchy, right? But when it gets into that cake, even though it's frozen, like it can't withstand it, you know? And again, like a great cake. Oreos and anything, all for it. Like I've had a container, it's not a box anymore, but like, you know, a container where you pull up the little thing and then it's like sticky and you can put it back down. Of double stuffs here, because we thought we were going to have a party and then it rained too much. So I've just been eating like one or two a day. And it's beautiful. It's like a double stuffed Oreo is one of the perfect cookies, but it just can't take it. Like it's not engineered the same way as Carvel crunchies. We've also had a couple rolls of flying saucers, which get this, my wife figured this out. And it's like, it's heavy ice cream, Carvel. You know, like you don't remember, like grew up eating it, was you see it at birthday parties. Every once in a while, I get a flying saucer in the summer. Always exciting. When you eat it, when you're, you know, like an old 81-year-old like myself, it's a lot to deal with. So I'm not even eating the whole thing. So we've been cutting them in half and kind of splitting them. And you pop it in the microwave for like, because the freezer's, I don't know, or the drawer it's in the freezer, like it's very frozen. You put it in for like 7 seconds. And it just softens it up a little bit and it softens up the cookie a little bit and it is bliss, baby. Get yourself some flying saucers. Think about that. You got to put it on a plate or a paper towel or something because it'll, you know, the cookie will kind of like stick to the tray.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend anybody just put food straight on your microwave tray. Well, who does that? Do you do
well,
that?
Well, I mean, I obviously did it a couple times. And
you can't be doing that.
Like I actually did it a second time.
Oh, that's nasty.
That must have been an outlier. No.
Be like, oh, why does this also taste a little bit like fettuccine alfredo or something? You know,
it's I'm
like
putting that on the fucking tray.
Just like shoveling stuff into the microwave with
almost nothing
underneath
else. So microwaving is like, you know, solid and confidence inspiring like that. Anyway, I've stopped.
Okay. All right, good. Troubling for a second there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm past it, but you're right to recognize that. All right, back to boots. This one coming right for us. It seems accusational. What's held you back from trying to make your own handmade boot?
What has held me back? I wouldn't be good at it. Yeah, I don't have whatever extreme levels of attention to detail bordering on like kind of OCD to obsess about the stuff. I just wouldn't be good at it. I'm sure of that. I'm sure I would be terrible at it. I would probably injure myself a lot. I would slice myself up all the time. Like, I know you almost stabbed yourself in the face or something, right? Trying to do it.
Well, no, I hit myself in the face with the shoe. You know, the shoe to be when I was in Northampton, at Crown Northampton / E. Woodford. And the guys in there, Will and Lewis, they like, let us try. Like, hey, you know, we got it all prepped. Here's the insole. Holdfast is there. We're just putting this welt on. Here's how you do it. And it's like, okay, saw you do it. Looks really easy. Thank you for doing it nice and slow, which it turned out was actually incredibly fast versus what you can do. I mean, you got to get, you know, the bristles, right? Like you have your thread and it's attached to these bristles and they're really thin and the hole's there and you got your awl. And I like managed not to cut myself with the awl, but man, those things are sharp. And, you know, you have a couple pieces here, right? That you got to get it through. You know, there's like multiple layers and like you think you got it and it's hitting the welt or the insole or whatever it might be. It's really tough. And it was on this lasting pin. It's not locked on there, you know, because they're usually used by skilled professionals. And it rotates around, like you can kind of get it to a place where it's comfortable and all that. And yeah, it just kind of it went flying off as I'm, you know, pulling up. You want to pull out, you learn. You want to pull like kind of sideways instead of up, which for me was the natural movement. And it just kind of clocked me in the face. So like it is legitimately dangerous, even under skill guidance. Very difficult. Took me about 10 minutes to put in 3 stitches. Obviously, you get better at that. The reward was substantial for 3 garbage stitches. You're like, whoa, you see where this is going. And you start to get that feeling of what it would be. And as somebody who for years was like, oh yeah, I mean, I got to try this, right? You know, got to attempt a resole. It's like, what am I doing this all day long, talking about this stuff and not actually attempting any of it? And so I did it and I was happy to and saw it all quite differently. Like, I think that's the biggest part of it. I don't think that I would be the best at it either. Like, I really don't. I think I could put something together that was like kind of decent and maybe wearable for myself, you know, that I would be happy enough with. And that's just putting the damn thing together, you know, like creating a quality pattern and all that. I think I would not do well there. But let's say that you had all the pieces, which is cheating to be sure, but still an accomplishment. Like, I think I can do decently at it. I wish that I kind of had a slightly different brain for it because it's surely remarkably rewarding. But I still do want to do it just from kind of an educational perspective, but I don't know. It's also like time. You got to be like, all right, I'm going to work on this for hours every night or whatever it is. I don't know. Maybe when my kids are older. I mean, I'm old, but somehow these kids are very young.
Yeah, I think making by hand is just beyond my skill set potential. Even if I worked for hours and hours or days, weeks, months, years, I don't think I'd ever be good at it. I think I could work at a factory. I think I could do, you know, if I had the machines and like people doing the steps I'm bad at, like, I don't think I could sew the uppers. I don't think I could sew that neatly. They wouldn't look good, but like I could probably work a lasting machine. I think I could do the sanding. I
mean, like, you'll see a lot of people who they make leather goods, right? And they get all into that. And most of them don't even end up making shoes. Like, they're either happy with it or the same stuff we're talking about. But that's like something of a natural progression, right? Like, you're out there, you're cutting, you're seeing how things come together in that way. And like, they don't do that. Graham Ebner, cowboy bootmaker, fabulous cowboy bootmaker that we had on the podcast, his grandma taught him to sew with a sewing machine when he was like 7 or something. Like, he always had that banked. He's like, all right, well, I know how to do this. Like, Lisa Sorrell, too. Like, she grew up sewing, and she's like, I can sew anything for you. It's like, all right, sew these boot tops. She's like, sure, no problem. Then she figured out the rest after, you know, having found somebody who could teach her. You know, again, as old as I am, I don't know if it's, like, probably too late to be, like, really good at it. But, yeah, I still want to give it a shot. I just kind of need to find the time.
But, yeah, well, told me back from making boots. I know I wouldn't be good at it. I wouldn't want to wear a pair of boots that I made. Whenever I cook anything, I hate it. Everyone else is like, oh, it's good, it's good. We like it, we're eating it. And I'm just like, I overcooked this part of it. You're in your own head about your own stuff. I don't think I'd want to wear my own boots because I would be very critical of all the errors that I had made, which would be numerous.
You have nobody to blame but yourself, right? You can't be, oh, yeah, that brand, like, they messed it up. It's like, no, no, no. But you do realize just how impossible it is to do it well consistently.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever the setting, factory, so handmade workshop, or otherwise. And I think that's the thing, too. Let's just take the people who are already good at leatherworking or know how to sew or something like that. I don't even think that 1% of them would end up being, and that's not a knock on any of you listening who do that stuff, would end up being like a Nathan Florsheim, right? Or an Adele or something like that. Like, it's just, I don't know if it's kind of, you know, nature or nurture, right? Like, talent or what you've done that's kind of similar throughout the rest of your life. And I think that's what makes it so wonderful. The truly great outcomes from somebody who's just put it all together for whatever reason. As hard as it is, they love it and they get to keep doing it, you know, kind of as long as they want. I don't know. Like, God bless them. It's got to be fun. It's got to be quite wonderful to make things that, like, people love and treasure. I don't think that they would do that with mine. So everybody would be disappointed.
Yeah. It seems like a real pain in the ass to make boots. So there's also that. And some of the hardest parts are at the end.
Uh-huh.
So it's like, I already did the whole thing here. And then, you know, something tears while I'm sewing on the outsole, or I screw up the sanding of the heel or something, you know, something like that. It's like, well, this thing's just garbage now. And you've just wasted all this time. That would be so hard for me.
God bless everybody who has that hanging over their head the whole time and just keeps their eye on it. All right, let's do one or two more here. A while back, we did an episode. This is years ago at this point. The only 5 boots and shoes you need forever. And we basically had to cut out everything, keep stuff that, you know, we had currently, but add whatever, and that's it. And you had to think about, you know, situations and what you would wear when, and do you have something that you could wear the suit to a wedding or whatever else, and obviously just, you know, things that you like. So a listener wants to know if they've changed. They want us to revisit it.
Sure. Yeah, I went back. I went, because I don't remember anything I ever say on this podcast. So I did have to go listen to it again. I actually enjoyed it. I did. Yeah, so my 5, I had Rancourt Natural Chrome XL Ranger Mach. No notes on that. I'd still totally
keep it.
Totally keep that. I thought that was a great call. It's versatile. It's a nice hand sewn, but it's got laces so you can kind of walk around if you need to, go on a little hikey, leave them by the front door, go, you know, pick up a pizza. I think I talked a lot about picking up pizzas.
Mm-hmm.
Second, I had the Viberg by Withered Fig Mushroom Chamois 145. At the time of this, did not own that shoe. I last month bought a pair of them.
Wait, really?
From Nathan Florsheim.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That was a great call. Total keeper, man. Total keeper. As I said, right, I was doing shorts and derbies all summer. He was selling these derbies, and I was like, great. I'll just add that to the rotation. Working out great.
It is one of the great 145s of all time.
Yeah, classic. Third, I had the Edward Green Galway 72 last in dark brown Utah. The kind of a grained leather country boot. No notes on that. That's a classic.
We got 3 keeps.
I got 5 keeps, dude. I got 5.
Holy shit.
I nailed this thing. Next, I had Hiro Yanagimachi split toe Blucher.
Blucher.
Great. I still own those, still wear those, you know, to the opera, to weddings, whatever.
Those are great. And you've had those modified, right?
I did have them. So in the podcast, I was like, hey, yeah, one note that I would do is I would do them in museum calf instead of just straight normal calf, right? Spice it up a little bit. And I think after that, I sent them to my buddy Greg Park at Hancore, who's a very talented patina artist, and said, go to town on these things, spice them up a little bit, possibly inspired by our own podcast. And he spiced them up and they look fantastic. Great. Another keeper. Fifth one I had, Viberg Lost and Found Natural Chrome Excel Service Boot. Why am I getting rid of that? That's great. Those are classics. I still have those. I love them. They're beautiful.
You went 5 for 5. And there's nothing else that you're like, since then, you're like, oh, well, if I could add or swap it out or nothing?
I mean, I don't know how I'm living without loafers in this scenario. I don't know. But what am I cutting? Because these are all great choices for me. So I'm just living without it. I've got 2 good summer, you know, shoes for summer in the shorts. If I could get 6, yeah, it would be some Grandstone loafers. But it was 5, not 6. So I got to stick with it. I got to stick with what I'm doing. And I now own everything except for the Galways. I don't own Galways, but I own the other 4. What about you? How are you feeling about your 5?
I mean, pretty good. I do have a couple notes. Before I get to it, I just looked it up. We taped this thing or published it. Probably taped it a couple months before, August 4th, 2020.
Oh, man.
This is well over 3 years ago, and you're telling me you were just right.
Crushed it. You must have still been in your 40s then.
Almost. Almost. All right, so let's go through mine. Yeah, I mean, I do have a couple changes here, but I'm still pretty impressed with myself. So one, I had some 145s. Like, we're still 140 Viberg 145 boys over here. Good for us. At that time, I think they were my first pair. Tobacco, chamois, chamois, rough out from Standard and Strange. Actually, just sold them like a couple days ago. Wasn't really looking to, but somebody came asking and I was like, I just don't wear these enough anymore. And they were like a little too small in the toes and fit ever so slightly differently from the Kudu pair, same size 1035 last, that I still have. And I don't know, the leather's a little stretchier. They just came out a little differently. Those still fit great. So yeah, obviously I didn't keep them. But since then, I did acquire what I consider to be probably the great pair of shoes I'll ever own. I will never get rid of under any circumstances, which is this just one-off sample that, you know, hasn't really turned into more shoes just due to the lack of leather. This Crust Natural M's work shoe butt, cap toe, 110 last, 145 Oxford from Viberg on a Ridgeway sole. They're phenomenal. I think they're the coolest shoes I've ever owned. It's a huge last, but somehow the cap toe kind of like chills it out or dresses it up a little bit. I mean, the leather is just special. It's special, special stuff. They fit me perfectly. And you kind of, you know, to a casual observer, these things on this giant, weird, round last are like the fanciest shoes they've ever seen. And, you know, that Crust, you can just like hit them with a brush. Like, you don't even have to put on more VSC or Saphir or whatever. It's just in there and you can bring it back up. So when you travel with them, you know, you can buff them up before you go to dinner. I love those things. I'll probably be wearing them at boot camp this weekend. So that was one. That was semi-keep. You know, we're keeping the style. Next one's a semi-keep too. I picked JM Weston Golf. I think I said like tan box calf. And at that point, I don't know if I had a pair of suede, like dark brown suede golfs, which I still have. But since then, I picked up a pair of JM Weston Golfs in kind of light brown, kind of like grainy leather. And they're a little less formal, maybe, but I wear them all the time. I try and find opportunities for them, dress them up, dress them down type situation. Also on a Ridgeway sole. Don't think I'm ever getting rid of these things. I love them. Take them out in the rain. You can spill shit on them. Like, doesn't matter. So semi-keep. I had Flame Panda monkey boots on there. And I had some at the time, but I think I picked them in a different leather. I had like some wax flesh, like the big ones. He has a couple different monkey boot styles. And these are like the big, chunky, like more involved pattern ones. I don't know if there's necessarily a name for them. On like the Dr. Soul's corded sole, like the most overbuilt boot you could possibly have. They ended up being a little big, so I don't have them anymore. But love Peng, love what he does. And at that point, I don't even know if he was making them or I just wasn't paying attention. But like his slimmer profile monkey boots, just like simpler pattern, no toe box. I'm switching to those. So we're still doing Flame Panda Monkey boots, but completely different pattern. Probably tall, maybe 7 inches. Some leather, whatever leather. I'm not really keeping any of what I said, but I kind of am. Then I had White's semi-dress and brown dress, which I didn't own at the time, but just thought would be like a great all-around boot. I don't know, maybe. Like, I love that leather. I love White's. I have a pair, 7-inch with like Lyman patch, one of the collabs we did that I love wearing. I wear all the time. It's like a lot of boot, but like something White's, something brown dress. Yes, I'm keeping that as my kind of like standard type boot. And then another shoe that I didn't have, but I said I was going to have forever. Alden Snuff Suede, unlined, Leisure Hand Sewn on a leather sole. I'd probably go with those, or maybe the kind of Grantstone equivalent, because the Grantstones just fit me a little better. But I do like the idea of having a loafer and in that leather. So yeah, I didn't really nail it as well as you did, but I'd say I'm pretty close. Like, I don't really know how much. Actually, at this point, probably like these Russell Moccasin fishing Oxfords or Huron Oxfords that I got, I wear them constantly. So I think those have to get in here somewhere. I don't know where. Maybe I lose the loafers too, actually. Maybe I end up losing the loafers.
It's hard, man. I can't imagine living without loafers. I can't imagine.
Yeah, but you just added them as your sixth.
Yeah. But if you could have six, you would also take loafers. So I feel like...
I would definitely add loafers as number six.
Yeah. Yeah. Loafers are pretty... They're pretty essential. They make a lot of things work.
It's good. And I still have Color 8 Shell Alden loafers that... I love them. But I feel like they don't go with everything, right? Like Snuff Suede, just whatever you're wearing, you just put them on.
The suede makes it so easy. I feel like wearing shell loafers with shorts is a little bit trickier. It's a little trickier. I've tried it too. Didn't quite do it for me. Just the clash of formality. And look, I've said this before. I don't want to be wearing shorts. My threshold for wearing shorts is pretty high. Yeah, just the dark color 8 contrasted against my pasty white legs is not a good visual aesthetically.
It's tough to even think about.
Snuff suede, it blends in a little bit better. It's not quite the stark contrast of a color 8.
All right, well, pretty good work by me. Great work by you. You know yourself, which is important in this whole thing.
I'm very in tune with myself. That is very true. The most important thing about all of this stuff, right? All of this, you know, wearing boots, just life. You got to know who you are. You got to know what you're about. What do you like? What are you into? What are you trying to do? What are your motivations? What kind of cheesecake do you like? What kind of sheet cake do you like? These are all important questions that you need to ask yourself.
Sometimes it takes a while to figure it out.
It's true.
Part of the fun. Follow the journey. All right. We got called somewhere. Huge thanks to Nyx for sponsoring this episode. Subscribe to their YouTube channel and newsletter if you know what's good for you. Get in that Stitchdown Premium Discord, the last sane place on the boot internet. You'll love it. I promise. More info at stitchdown.com. Ticho, fine work, my friend.
You too, buddy.
Appreciate it. All right, that's it for this week. Take care of your shoes. We'll see you next time.